नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमस्तुभ्यं भगवते पुरुषाय महात्मने भूतवासाय भूताय हारय परमात्मने नमस्तुभ्यं भगवते पुरुषाय महात्मने भूतवासाय भूताय हराय परमात्मने नमस्तुभ्यं भगवते पुरुषाय महात्मने भूतवासाय भूताय हराय परमात्मने
Tubhyam, to you, Bhagavate, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Purushaya, who are present within as the Supersoul, Mahatmane, who are all pervasive, Bhuta Abhashaya, who are the shelter of the material elements, beginning with the ethereal sky, Bhutaya, who exist even prior to the creation, Paraya,
to the Supreme Cause.
Paramatmane,
who are beyond all material cause.
We offer our obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although present in the hearts of all living beings as the Supersoul. You are all-pervasive. Although the original shelter of all created material elements, you exist prior to their creation. And although the cause of everything, you are transcendental to all material cause and effect, being the Supreme Soul. Purport. The beautiful Sanskrit poetry of this verse should be chanted out loud for the transcendental pleasure of the reciter and the hearer.
Om Magyan Timidandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Gadamayam Tadati Swapadandikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutha Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavanscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tham Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parichana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakambitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priyai Kalpataruvyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hari 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 Rama Hari Rama 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 Hari Hari Hare Krishna
Celebrating Janmashtami. We would like to dedicate our Janmashtami festival to two very great personalities in our gratitude and our prayers. First, to His Holiness Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj, who just recently miraculously lived through a liver transplant and a kidney transplant and several other procedures.
such a personality who's given his life, his soul, his very everything as an instrument of Prabhupada's compassion. We dedicate our Janmashtami festival in gratitude to him and in prayers that with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and will, he recovers for many more years of enlightening the world. And also we dedicate to His Holiness Sri Padgunagrahi Swami Maharaj, one of the very, very senior disciples of Srila Prabhupada. In almost 50 years of devotional service, he joined, I believe, in the 60s. He's been temple presidents. He's fearlessly gone to places like all over America, Korea, South America, spreading the glories of the holy name. He's now at the Bhaktivedanta Hospice in Sri Vrindavan Dham, where he has chosen to live the last phase of his devotional service. And we offer our gratitude and our sincerest heartfelt prayers for Sri Krishna Balaram, Sri Radha Shamsundar, to bless him. The prayer today is being offered by a group of exalted personalities who are quite unlikely and different from most of the great sages and rishis and mahatmas offering prayers in Srimad Bhagavatam. With your permission, I will speak the background to these prayers. Krishna appears in this world especially to perform pastimes to attract our hearts to his eternal loving service. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does tell Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chuduskrita Dharma Samstapanaradaya Sambhavami Shuke Shuke, that he comes into this creation of his again and again to reestablish the true principles of religion, Dharma, to protect the innocent and the pious, and to subdue the miscreants. But as we spoke yesterday, various plenary portions, expansions, avatars can fulfill those roles. In fact, often somebody who is empowered by Krishna himself can do that. And even if Krishna wishes, he can do those things just through the agency of nature. He has thunderbolts to subdue miscreants if he wants to. But Krishna personally comes specifically for the purpose of performing his infinitely sweet, all-attractive pastimes of Vrindavan, to reveal to the world the intimacy of the love of the Brijabasis for him and the intimacy of his love for the Brijabasis. Such pastimes are so pleasing to the ears, pleasing to the heart.
that when we become attracted to them, when we get a taste for hearing about them, while chanting the holy names of the Lord, then Oma Pavitra Pavitrava Sarvavastam Gatopiva. Then all the unwanted impurities of our hearts are removed, and that natural attraction awakens in our heart. One day, when Krishna was in his Poganda Lila, that means the ages from 6 until about 10, he and his friends, the gopas, were herding the cows through the forests and the pastures of Vrindavan. On that particular day, Lord Sri Balaram did not go with Krishna and the cowherd boys. It was the summertime. The heat was scorching. Now we read in Srimad Bhagavatam in some places that even in the summer, by the Yoga Maya arrangement of the Lord, there would be such nice clouds and mists of water floating through the air from fragrant lotus-filled ponds and waterfalls, that it was more pleasing than the spring. All the 5 seasons were simultaneously existing in Sri Vrindavan, simply to bring, according to the time, place, and circumstance, the most pleasure to all the Brijvasis. So why is it scorching hot today? Of course, we're in an air-conditioned temple hall. We're speaking about Talila. Why was it so scorching hot for Krishna and all the gopas? Because everything that was happening in Vrindavan by the Yogamaya energy of the Lord was to facilitate and enhance and deepen the intensity of the rasa, or the loving emotions, between Krishna and his devotees. So all the cows and the calves and bulls, they were there along with the cowherd boys. They were very thirsty. And they came upon a large lake which is just close to the Yamuna River, and enthusiastically drank the water. Instantly, all of them fell lifeless. They lost all consciousness. They were dead. Why is that? Shukadev Goswami tells Parikshit Maharaj that living in that lake was a great serpent named Kaliya. And he had lived there a very long time. Ages is the word used in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was so envious, so arrogant. Envy and arrogance are like poison. They poison our life. And what happens when you're filled with poison? Then those who come in contact with, you have a tendency to poison them. So this lake, just by being in the presence of Kaliya, who lived deep down inside of it, it was so poisonous. Literally, the water was constantly boiling because the poison created such heat.
And it is described that nothing could live even near it. The vapors of this lake would kill anyone or anything. All the trees, the plants, the grass, for quite a distance around it, was dead. And even if a bird was flying way up above, just by the smell of the lake, they would also lose their life. When Krishna saw all his beloved friends laying on the banks of this lake unconscious, he felt great compassion upon them. Because after all, they had dedicated their lives, their souls, their everything for his pleasure. When Krishna sees a devotee surrenders their heart with sincerity to serve him, that awakens Krishna's karuna ras, his mood of deep compassion. Krishna glanced upon them. By his glance, he awakened their life. All the cows and the gopas, they stood up. They looked around. What just happened? By Krishna's grace, they could understand what happened. They just drank poison. They had just died. And by Krishna's compassionate glance, he brought them back to life. This is very much concerning ourselves. Because from a spiritual perspective, what is life? Life is consciousness. And true consciousness is consciousness that I am the eternal soul. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. My true nature, my true conscious self is to love Krishna. To serve Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, in his explanation of the Maha Mantra, he tells that this chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, is not an artificial imposition on the mind. Krishna consciousness is not that. It is the original natural consciousness of every living being. But we have forgotten. And in that state of forgetfulness, it is like spiritual death. What is death in this world? There's no such thing as death, because the soul's eternal. Vasamchi Jirnani Yatavihaya. Bhagavad Gita tells that when the soul leaves this particular body, it's like giving up an old set of clothes, garments, to get a new one. Dehino smin yata dehe komaram yoganam chata yata, that as a child, the soul passes through childhood, adolescence, middle age, old age. In the same way, the soul passes into another body at the time of death. Nahanyate hanyamane sarire. For the soul, there's no such thing as death. So what is death in this world? It really doesn't exist. But because we have forgotten our eternal soul, we're identifying with all the changes of this body to be myself. Srimad Bhagavatam describes in the 11th canto that we could learn this lesson from the moon. We have Amavasya, and we have Trayodasi, Ekadasi, Dwadasi, Purnima. But actually, it's always Purnima from the moon's perspective. The moon is always full. It's not that the moon's getting cut up and then put back into the pieces, like pasted together again. The moon is always full. But our appearance, what our perception of the moon is, it's going through the new moon, the quarter moon, the half moon, the full moon. And similarly, the soul is always Satchidananda. It's eternal. It's full of knowledge. It's full of bliss. But when we're seeing, when the soul is experiencing life through the mirror of the contaminated, illusioned, forgetful mind, then we're identifying with all these bodily conditions as ourself. So forgetfulness of our true constitutional nature to love Krishna is like a state of being spiritually dead. We don't know who we really are. And there's no way we can wake up from this condition, save and except by Krishna's mercy. Krishna tells us material nature is very, very strong. But if one takes shelter of me, then by Krishna's grace we can wake up. So it's the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Jeev jago, jeev jago, goda chandra pole. Kota nidra jayo maya pisa chira kole. Wake up, sleeping souls. You are sleeping in the lap of maya, of illusion. And when maya puts you to sleep, you're helpless. All you could do is just struggle within this dream that's manipulated and that's facilitated by our ahankar, our false ego. The dream of my roles, of my particular stage of life, my relationships. How to wake up from that? So deep-seated, such a habit to think in these terms. We're so obsessed with trying to find pleasure and relief from pain in this dream, it's impossible to actually come out of it. Maya dhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. But Krishna's the controller of maya. If Krishna's pleased with us, then by his compassion, by his glance, he awakens our original consciousness. He brings us back to true life. Just like the gopas and the cows. They drank poison and they died. Krishna glanced upon them because they had surrendered their hearts to him and they were brought back to life. Better than ever. So similarly, somehow or other, we have all been affected by the poison of arrogance, lust, greed, envy, illusion, anger. All this poison that's floating around the lake of material existence. Mumbai, there's a lot of it. But it's all over the material world, from the highest planet to the lowest, especially here in this earth planet in Kali Yuga. Because we're affected by the vapors, and some of us are affected by the vapors just because we're close to it, and others are enthusiastically drinking it. And others are diving as deep as they can. and we're spiritually lost our life. But by the mercy of Krishna, when he glances upon us, he brings back the awareness. And that glance takes many forms. Especially the association of his devotees. In the association of devotees, Krishna's glance awakens the understanding in our heart of what the real purpose in golden life is, what real happiness is beyond this ever-changing, uncertain world of birth and death. Adosha tata sadhu sangata bhajana kriya. When one has that initial faith, which is sometimes by previous lives of agyata sukriti or association, then in the association of devotees, that life in the form of shraddha or faith is awakened in our heart. And then we're taught bhajana kriya. In the association of saintly people, we're taught how to perform sadhana, how to live in a real spirit of seva, to more and more clean the mirror of the mind and wake up. That is how Krishna is glancing upon us. And to receive that glance is the most important. Whether we are willing to receive that glance by accepting his mercy or not is the most important decision in our life. So for the cows and the gopas, this was an incredible experience. Because they understood what happened. And they felt so nice. Despite Krishna's glance, he raised us from the dead. Parikshit Maharaj, when he heard this story, he was so enthusiastic. Because as we make spiritual progress, the symptom is we become more and more eager to hear about Krishna. This loyalty, this great eagerness to hear and chant the glories of the Lord is a symptom of spiritual progress. So Parikshit Maharaj, he was fasting from food and water and even sleep. He had 7 days to live. Eagerly listening to every word of Shukadev Goswami. Now, before he approached the 10th canto, now by this time, many days have passed. He was listening to all the teachings and all the philosophical explanations of the 2nd canto, the teachings of Kapila Dev, Sankhya Yoga. Sometimes we want to kind of get through that. But he was drinking in his nectar because the teachings of Krishna, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is none different than Krishna. He had such an eagerness. And now, he only has a couple days left to live. He's been fasting. And he's relished every word of the first 9 cantos. And now it's the 10th canto. And Krishna has appeared within the world. And he's hearing this story with such total faith. Tadvedipnani patena pariprashnena sevaya.
Parikshit Maharaj was such an example. He approached his guru, Shukadev Goswami, and submitted himself with an eagerness to serve, to please, and to hear. So he asked Shukadev Goswami, please tell me more details. Who is this Kaliya? What was he doing in a lake in Vrindavan? And why was the lake so poisoned? And Shukadev Goswami told the story. Krishna, after he awakened the life of all of his friends, they could have left that place because Kaliya was way deep down in this lake. It was a very, very deep lake. It was actually very huge in those days. Kaliya didn't know they were there. They could have just gone back to the forests of Vrindavan and played so many sweet games of love. But Krishna wanted to play an even sweeter game of love. He looked around and there was one single tree that was alive. Everything else was dead. It was a Kadamba tree. Somehow there, by miraculous nature, some nectar was put on that tree that kept it alive. So Krishna climbed the tree. And all the gopas and all the cows and the bulls and the calves were looking up at Krishna. What's he going to do next? How exciting. That's what Vrindavan was. Everyone is thinking, what is Krishna going to do next? There wasn't a boring moment for anyone in Vrindavan. Everything was full of excitement and dynamic expectation of just loving Krishna and being attracted to Krishna and serving Krishna. So Krishna climbed to a large branch on the Kadamba tree. And he got ready. He prepared himself to fight. Krishna is so wonderful. He's just a little boy. This is the beginning of his Pokanda Leela. Because according to the chronology of Srimad Bhagavatam, Haripo. Krishna had just entered into his age of Poganda and Gopastami. He was given charge of the cows. Previous to that, he and his friends in Balaram cared for the calves. And Balaramji had just gone to Taliban forest with Krishna, and together they liberated Denukasura and all of his friends. Then they came back to Vrindavan after that, and everyone was singing songs and playing flutes and telling everyone about Krishna's pastimes with beautiful song and poetry. And Yashoda Mai and Rohini Devi brought in Krishna and put on their laps and kissed them and embraced them and bathed them and fed them and put nice clothes on them and then put them to sleep. And all the gopis, when Krishna would come in from the pastures, their eyes were like the tatak. They were thirsting for the sight of Krishna. Throughout the day, they couldn't be satisfied with anything or anyone else. And when Krishna was returning with his friends, they gazed upon him and drank in his beauty. And Krishna manifest his love through his darshan and entered into the depths of their hearts and reciprocated with their love.
And just after this, the next pastime is the one we are discussing today. So Krishna is about 6 years old. And he climbs up the tree. And he wants to make this pastime as dramatic as anyone can imagine. And when Krishna wants to make something dramatic, anything he does is dramatic. Yes, if Krishna raises his eyebrow for a second, everyone in Vrindavan for the rest of eternity will be writing songs and singing kirtan about Krishna raising his eyebrow. If a little wind makes his peacock feather move, or what to speak, makes his dhoti just slightly fly in the air. Oh, how wonderful. So many bhajans, so many kirtans, so many festivals, utsav, mahotsav, feast. Krishna's dhoti moved in the wind. It's more exciting than anything you'll ever find on any of the TV stations in India or international. We have our Bollywood, in the West there's Hollywood, so many entertainment industries. Oh, nothing could ever compare to the impact on people's hearts as anything Krishna does. So now, Krishna, on the Kadamba, he's already kind of brought the suspense up. The lake is so poisoned that anything around it dies. All of his friends have just died. And now they're looking up. And Krishna climbs the tree. And he looks really blissful. And he looks very determined. Something that's a sign that Krishna is about to do something that's forever going to be glorified as heroic. He tightens his belt. That's very significant. And then he slaps his arms with his palms. Next, Krishna jumps right into the center of the lake. Who could do that? And although Krishna is very small size, he weighs very light. You know, we've already heard previously in the story of Agasura, where the gopas would wrestle with Krishna. And they would defeat Krishna. And Krishna would carry them on shoulders. And somehow or other, if Krishna won, which sometimes he did, then they would carry Krishna on their shoulders. So these little children, they're carrying Krishna on their shoulders. He's very light. And Yashoda Mai, she's lifting up Krishna every day, and she's putting on lap, and she's offering the milk from her body to him to nourish him. And he's smiling. In fact, all the gopas and gopis, the elder ones, they love to pick up Krishna. But when Krishna jumped in the water, the Upanishads tell the absolute truth is lighter than the lightest and heavier than the heaviest. He made such a splash that on all sides of this gigantic lake, it overflooded. And it made an enormous crashing sound. So loud that deep, deep, deep down, the lake was like an ocean as far as its depth, where Kaliya was living. And Kali was a mystic. He wasn't just like these little serpents we see crawling around. He was a powerful yogi. Due to his unprecedented hatred, deceit, cunningness, and cruelty, he was given this body to live in. But our acharyas tell that he had a mystic city called Jalastamba. He could create solid forms out of water. And deep down at the bottom of this lake, he had created an entire kingdom of solidified water. He could make gold and silver and emeralds. He could make pillars and palaces and gardens. And he had so many wives and children and friends. Of course, all his friends were surrendered to him. But when he heard this crashing sound of splash, he was furious. Janasya moho yamaham mameti. The basis of material illusion is this idea of I and mine. I am this body. That means I am of this race. I am this of nationality. I am of this religion. I am of this sector of society. And whatever's in connection to this body is mine. So he could not tolerate anyone had the audacity to enter into his property. Today we see signs saying no trespassing. Yes? You cannot come here because this is mine. And Srila Prabhupada, our beloved Guru Maharaj, he could, from a universal spiritual perspective, that Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, everything is the property of Krishna, even all the immigration. You can only come into my country if you have my permission. Yes? But actually everything belongs to Krishna. Somehow or other, humanity is always trying to divide things up in I and mine. This is a very, very unfortunate condition, but obviously it's necessary in the world today to protect. So Kali could not tolerate. He was furious. Bhagavad Gita explains, when there is attachment between the senses and the objects, when some challenge or reversal takes place, there's anger. That's Kaliya. Who dares defy me? He took it so personally. It was like an assault to his false ego that anyone would possibly go into his lake. And at least if they're going to the lake, they should respect and honor Kali enough to do it secretly. You know, to just kind of go in and stay on the surface and swim around and then tell everyone, I went in Kali's lake. But here is somebody who's diving in and making such a huge splash. This gigantic monster, he had 1,000 hoods. That means 1,000 faces. 101 were primary. He was probably bigger than the whole Chopati. He was gigantic. And suddenly, in his full wrath, he emerges from the lake. And his eyes are red like burning coals, looking in all directions. And then he sees little Gopal. And Gopal's just swimming in circles like a little boy. This was such an insult to him. Kali, with his full force, he lunges toward Krishna and bites Krishna in the chest. The gopas are watching this. All the cows unblinkingly seeing Krishna in this situation. Then Kaliya wraps his coils, his mighty, insurmountable, serpentine coils around the soft little body of Krishna and squeezes. Krishna appears to be completely helpless. At that moment, inauspicious omens manifested in Vrindavan. The earth and the sky and in people's bodies. There was earthquakes, tremors. The whole earth started shaking. All the homes of the Brijavasis were shaking. There was meteors falling in the sky right before people's eyes. And there was trembling in all the Brijabasi's bodies, indicating something inauspicious is happening. And for the Brijabasis, they're always thinking of Krishna. Everything is centered around Krishna. As soon as anything inauspicious happens, they're thinking, something must have happened to Krishna. And this day it was extremely intensified. The reason? The first thought in everyone's mind. Today, Krishna went to the forest without his elder brother Balaram. Anything could happen to him. They were besides themselves in grief. Everyone except Balaram. He was smiling. Because he knew there was no danger to Krishna. Because after all, Krishna's my little brother. So they all left the village of Vrindavan to search for Krishna. And meanwhile, they're seeing the meteors and they're feeling the trembling in the earth and they're feeling the vibrations in their body and their eyes are uncontrollably, their left eye is uncontrollably feeling pulsations. What's happened to Krishna? It describes, Sukadev Goswami tells, that all the Brijabasis, they were in so much anxiety for Krishna, thinking Krishna to be helpless. They were thinking just like a cow thinks about her helpless calf when the calf is in danger. Of all analogies, that's most graphic. Krishna's Gopal, the friend and protector of cows and calves and bulls. He's Govinda. He gives pleasure to them. His abode is Gokul, Goloka, the place, the planet of cows. And he's a gopa. And Sri Radharani is a gopi. a cowherd girl. So on this subject, I would like to share something of my heart. And I may say it again tomorrow because it's John Master. But Govardhan Eco Village and Radha Gopinath Temple are the same. There's no difference. Because everyone and everything that's at Govardhan Eco Village is coming from Radha Gopinath Temple. Sanat Kumar Prabhu, Gauranga Prabhu, they're devotees from Radha Gopinath Temple. Krishna Chandra Prabhu, Srinathji Prabhu, Radha Priya Devi, Maithili Devi, Keshav Prabhu, Radha Giridhari Prabhu, they all were devotees here. You know, in every way there's unity. It's the farm community of Radha Gopinath Temple. And we named it Govardhan. And Govardhan one means, it's the name of Krishna, which means he nourishes and gives happiness to cows. So the cows there belong to all of us. They're Radha Gopinath's cows. And his name is Gopinath. So we have to take seriously taking care of his cows. And in this age of Kali Yuga, when cows are so abused and so mistreated everywhere in the world, it was Srila Prabhupada's great desire that we take care of cows and show the highest level of cow protection for the pleasure of Krishna and to instruct the world. And when Prabhupada talked about cow protection, it wasn't just not killing them. Was making them happy. Just be patient and I'll get back to the story. I remember I was living at New Vrindavan and I happened to only have two services. I took care of cows and deities, Radha Vrindavanath. And it was so inseparable. And I remember listening to a recorded tape of Srila Prabhupada. At that time, when my whole heart and life was so much personally milking cows and brushing cows and bringing the cows to the pastures and bringing them back from the pastures and helping them when they were a little ill and all of that. And Prabhupada said in this lecture, the barometer of the spiritual condition of a society can be determined by how happy the cows are. He didn't just say that they're not killed, but they're happy. And he was in India. I think it was Hyderabad or somewhere in India. He was giving an example of how happy cows were in his movement. He said, when the leader of our community calls the cows by their name, they blissfully come running. I never saw that part. But we used to call the cows. I'm not going to do the call now. I haven't done it in many years, but it's true. We had a certain call. We would like just a sound. And wherever the cows were in the pastures, they would come running. So Srila Prabhupada wanted cows happy. And Govardhan is Krishna. How did he make cows happy? It's described by Sri Radharani and the gopis, how Govardhan is the best devotee of Krishna because he's giving so much pleasure to the cows and to Krishna's devotees. By very, very tasteful grasses that taste sweet,
that give energy, that produce wonderful milk, and that nourish the health, and supplies ample water for the cows to drink, which tastes like nectar. So this is what we learn from the scriptures and the acharyas. So here, you know, I personally feel very responsible, and I would love for all of us, we can make great spiritual advancement if we share that feeling of responsibility that these are cows of Radha Gopinath, Shri Radha Vrindavan Bihari, entrusted in our care, and to ensure that they're happy and well-fed and given plenty of wonderful space to jump and to dance. I'm appealing. We have different projects to help to facilitate the funding for the cows. Because it is serious. We need to ensure that they're really taken care of. If just one or two people were doing it, then we would have no opportunity to make this offering become spiritually dear to Krishna. So my request is each and every one of us all over Radha Gopinath Temple, and for those who are listening to this on recording all over the universe, there's different projects for adopting cows or offering seva to the cows, and if you can take that serious, I will be very, very grateful. And the cows will be very grateful. And Radharani will be the most grateful. So please, take it personal. So Krishna's in the coils of Kali. And he looks to be so completely helpless. And Yashoda Mai and all the gopis, they're feeling like a cow thinking of her calf in a helpless condition. Where is Krishna? How to find him? Because the pastures and the forests of Vrindavan are very extensive. They traced Krishna's very beautiful lotus footprint, which has special symbols that make them unique. And as soon as they saw the footprint of Krishna gracing the earth of Vrindavan, their hearts just melted. Melted with love and transcendental fear that something may happen to Krishna. Otherwise, we couldn't be feeling like this. And they were following the footprints. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura asks a simple question. How is it, if there's so many cows, about 900,000, in Nanda Maharaja's herd alone that Krishna was taking, how is it with all the cows and all the birds and all the gopas that they didn't cover Krishna's footprints? But every gopa, every animal, every bird, every cow of the whole forest of Vrindavan, they considered Krishna's footprints to be the treasure of Vrindavan Dham. And they honored, respected, and felt so much love for Krishna's footprints that never, ever, ever would anyone ever step upon or cover Krishna's footprints. So they followed. And as they were progressing, their hearts were beating with more and more anxiety and anticipation. And finally, they come to the shore of the lake. And they see Gopal wrapped by the coils of this mighty, gigantic snake, Kalia. With so many hoods. Red, hot, angry, hateful eyes. Each one of his faces had massive, sharp fangs. And a bifurcated tongue that was slithering in and out of his mouth. And from his massive nose, which were like pots where poison was boiling, came smoke. The Brijavasis are seeing Krishna in this state. He looks completely helpless. They didn't know what's happening and why. How did this... They wanted to ask the cowherd boys who were with Krishna. But all the cowherd boys seeing Krishna in the coils of Kalia, it caused so much pain. Due to love, they couldn't maintain their consciousness. All the cowherd boys were laying unconscious. And all the cows were crying, very loudly crying with tears pouring from their eyes. But cows don't talk human language, so they couldn't say anything. Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, and all the gopas and the gopis seeing Krishna in this condition, it was unbearable. It is said that Yashoda Mai, she was practically paralyzed, crying, with all the strength that was remaining in her body. And as they were, you know, they were, every step of the Brijavasis getting there in worry, they were falling unconscious and coming back to life, worrying what happened to Krishna. And now they see what happened. And it's the absolute worst than they could have ever imagined. Yashoda Mai is determined to go in the water and fight the snake. Somehow she has to help Krishna. And the other gopis were somehow or other trying to stop her from going in. But all the other gopis felt the same way as she did. Coming to consciousness, unconscious, the only way they could stay alive seeing Krishna in the grips of that snake is they took turns singing the pastimes of Krishna. The only way they can stay alive. And meanwhile, Nanda Maharaj is about to jump in the lake with all of the cowherd men, and Balaram is stopping them. Some he stopped them by his words, some he stopped them by actually physically stopping them. Balaram is supremely strong. And he understood that Krishna was in no danger at all. He was the only one of all the Brijavasis who wasn't on the verge of death and anxiety. He was smiling and laughing. Balaramji was thinking, when I take the form of Sheshanaga, Krishna doesn't play with me like this. What's so great about this Kalia? He's an insignificant, useless little water snake, and yet Krishna's giving him so much importance. For hours, Krishna did not even move. He looked so helpless. The Brijavasis, they were crying, they were falling down, they were getting up. They didn't know what to do. It was millions, billions, trillions of times worse than death to them to see Krishna in this state. Why did Krishna do that? Why did he wait so long? when he saw all his devotees suffering so much, to increase their love. Because it wasn't really suffering. Materially it appears like suffering, but because it was Krishna that they were feeling such deep feelings for, it was transcendental prem, premras, with love. The idea, viraha, love and separation, the pain actually expands the love. And therefore, love and separation is a higher ecstasy than being in the love in the presence of the Lord, because it's intensified. Similarly, when Krishna, by his own sweet will, puts himself in a vulnerable condition, it's to increase the love of his devotees. We find that. Hanuman in Ramlila is the very personification of bhakti or devotion. And where was his devotion at its peak? Because Sita is the supreme goddess of fortune. The expansion of Sita within the context of the material world is Durga and Kali. Who can do anything to Kali? Who can do anything to Durga? She's the controller of the entire material existence. She has so many weapons. And Sita, she's the source of Durga. Durga is her in a manifested state within this world. But yet the all-powerful Sita appeared to be so vulnerable. Like Krishna was in those coils of, he was in the captivity of Kaliya. Sita was in the captivity of Ravana in the Ashokvan. Ravana and his assistants were every day terrorizing her, and she was crying, Ram, Ram. And Hanuman, he was willing to jump over the ocean. And then when he saw Sita in that state, he gave Sita Ram's message. And when he came back to Kishkindha Kshetra, Malyavanta Prashravana, or the cave that Ram was living in, and he told Ram about what the condition of Sita was. And Ram was so vulnerable, he was so worried about Sita. He's the almighty, absolute truth, the cause of all causes, the all-powerful. The controller of all controllers. And he's wandering all over India looking for Sita, asking the deers and asking the moon and asking the trees, where is my beloved Sita? And asking Hanuman, please help me find Sita. So when Hanuman saw Ram's state and Sita's state, that's when he was most activated in his ecstatic, loving, devotional service. And later on, in the Battle of Sri Lanka, when that mighty javelin struck the chest of Lakshman, the symptoms of his life ceased. Ramchandra, he fell at Lakshman. He battled off Ravana and the asuras, and then he He got on his knees weeping and crying, appearing helpless in his love for his brother who was in a helpless state. And that's when Hanuman, in order to save Lakshman and save Ram from his anguish, Hanumanji jumped to the Himalayas, to the Gandhamadana mountain, and carried the entire mountain back. So many murtis of Hanumanji, he's carrying that mountain. That was so long ago. We're still honoring Hanuman for carrying that mountain. But what activated that devotion in him? That Ram and Lakshman appear to be in such a vulnerable human kind of condition. Similarly, Yashoda Mai, when Krishna would cry, she didn't think he's just the absolute truth. He's the source of Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. Nothing to worry about. She was thinking, he's my baby. If I don't feed him, if I don't protect him, he will die. When Balaram told Yashoda Mai, along with the other gopas, we saw Krishna secretly eating dirt, she was so upset. Because if Krishna eats dirt, he's going to get sick. He's my baby. Krishna, why are you eating dirt? She's chastising Krishna for eating dirt. And Krishna's saying, no, I did not eat dirt. She said, you did eat dirt. He said, no, I would never eat dirt. She said, but your friends are saying that you ate dirt. And he said, they are lying. And she said, but even Balaram says, and Balaram's always on your side, but today he's saying. Krishna said, no, I did not eat dirt. Look in my mouth. So open your mouth. He did eat dirt. If she saw dirt in his mouth, she would have been very, very much heartbroken. So just to distract her attention, she saw the entire universe in his mouth. And then she became very, very full of awe and reverence. Who am I to... I'm thinking that I'm the queen of Vrindavan and all these cows and all this property belongs to me, but... You must be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but you can't be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But Garga Muni said that you're like Narayan, but what does Garga Muni know? Going through all this, as she's seeing the universe in Krishna's mouth, she's thinking Garga Muni could say what he wants, but she was thinking, am I in some delusion? She was thinking, no, I'm quite all right. I'm doing all my responsibilities. Maybe I'm dreaming. And then she would... No, I'm actually awake. I'm not dreaming. How am I? What am I seeing? How am I seeing this? Let anyone say what they want. But I know and Krishna knows what is the truth. When lightning strikes, Krishna comes... And unless I embrace him and let him sleep in my bed with me, he will not sleep. He will cry. And unless he steals, and then he lies. The absolute truth does not lie. And he's hungry. And when he's hungry, sometimes he does all these fits. And when I give him my milk, he becomes very happy. So let anyone say, let any Garga Muni or any other Muni say whatever they want to say. I know the truth, and Krishna knows the truth, and the truth is, I am his mother and he is my son. And that is Krishna's, he's killing Putana, he's killing Aga, he's killing so many asuras, but still he's appearing so vulnerable and helpless to induce more intimate love from his most intimate devotees. And when Krishna saw Yashoda Mai feeling some reverence for him, seeing the universe within his mouth, his little stomach, all the planets, all the rivers, all the oceans, all the mountains, all the living entities, she even saw herself looking in Krishna's mouth. Krishna smiled. And she was overwhelmed with such motherly affection that she completely forgot about this insignificant event of seeing the universe in his mouth. And she actually saw it. It was there. But it was so insignificant to the sweetness of Krishna's smile. So Krishna's in Kaliya's grips. And he's just staying there for a couple hours, and everybody's crying. Nobody could live. The gopis, Sri Radharani and the young gopis, they're just looking at Krishna and their heart is breaking. And they're thinking of how Krishna would smile at them. And Krishna's beautiful pastimes. They were gazing upon Krishna with unblinking eyes, thinking about the things that Krishna may have said to them. And when everyone was on the verge of leaving their bodies, it came to that extent. Krishna does this to his devotees. Sometimes he tests us to the limits. And that's pretty nice. We should appreciate that. We see Krishna's behind it. So, Krishna expanded himself. And as he expanded, Kaliya felt such pain because he was gripping Krishna with all of his strength, squeezing, and Krishna was expanding and expanding, and Kaliya was squeezing, but he couldn't contain little Gopal, and then Gopal slipped out and went into the water. This is the most horrible part. But horrible means sweet and nectarine. Because it's Vrindavan. Kaliya sees Krishna. Now he's angrier than ever. He's humiliated. This little cowherd boy, he doesn't know who he is. He just thinks he's some undisciplined child daring to defy him. Kali is outraged. Now all of his hundreds of eyes are gazing at Krishna with the exclusive intent of killing this child. And his tongue is slithering and his fangs are shining and his poison is exuding out of his eyes even. He's so angry. And Krishna starts swimming in circles. He's swimming in circles, and Kali is trying to bite him, but he can't because Krishna's dancing around in circles. Quite incredible. Kali was going around and around and around trying to somehow or other catch Krishna, somehow or other bite Krishna, kill Krishna. And Krishna's just going in circles. And even though Kaliya has 1,000 hoods, all of them are attacking Krishna. He couldn't touch Krishna. And Krishna was going in these circles and circles and circles, and Kaliya was going in so many circles, Kaliya became so dizzy. He began to lose his strength. Then Krishna took one of the hoods of Kaliya with one hand and pushed it down and jumped on top to dance. Such a beautiful dance. Vrindavan Natavara, the supreme dancer of Vrindavan. Kaliya was dancing upon the hood of Kaliya. That's not an easy thing, because the hoods were moving really, really fast and really angry. He was shaking like anything to get Krishna off, because he couldn't bite him. He was moving, he was shaking, and serpents' hoods are very slippery and very violently moving. But whatever Kaliya did, Krishna, in perfect artistic dancing, he just danced with the motion. It's like, I don't know so much about, you know, how boys and girls dance, but Kirtan I know dancing, but it's not like that. In this material world, when two people are dancing together, it's a good dance when they kind of harmonize with each other. Otherwise, you know, if they're crashing and stepping on each other, it's not a very nice dance. Oh, Krishna was dancing with Kaliya. Kaliya wanted to kill Krishna. He wanted to bite Krishna. He wanted to eat Krishna. And he was so powerful, trying to get Krishna off his head by shaking, and all of the other hoods were attacking Krishna when he was on another hood dancing. And Krishna was like a dancing partner. Every movement and every attack, he would make another move to perfectly harmonize with it. And he was dancing so beautiful. No one had ever seen such a dance like this. The demigods, the devatas, the gandharvas, the charanas, the rishis, the sages, the wives of the demigods, they all came to see Krishna dance. And the devatas, especially the gandharvas and the charanas, they're the musicians of the heavenly worlds. But they had never seen such a graceful, artistic dance as Krishna on the hoods of Kaliya. In fact, the demigods, just to give pleasure to Krishna, began playing instruments. They were playing drums. They were singing songs. Krishna was accommodating everyone. He was dancing perfectly in sync with all the drum beats, with all the flutes, with all the prayers, with all the songs, with all the hoods of Kali attacking him. So beautiful. It was a scene that nobody has ever seen in the history of creation. The demigods were so proud and so filled with affection and love. They were constantly showering flowers on Krishna. We have our flower festival. But we only have the capacity for 1 or 2 tons of flowers. But the demigods, they have a lot of flowers. How many flowers were showering on Krishna? Please, through your ears, see this wonderful pastime within your hearts with faith. What an exciting performance. What a beautiful, heart-melting performance. Krishna's dancing. His feet are so soft. They're softer than the softest. When Krishna's walking in Vrindavan forest, the gopis are crying. Now what if Krishna steps on a pebble? Not even a rock, a pebble. Or what even if he steps on a little thorn? His feet are so soft, the gopis are thinking that the softest part of our body, we're afraid we may hurt Krishna's feet because they're so soft. When Krishna started taking care of cows, Yashodamai and the elder gopis made really nice shoes for Krishna. They said, please, your feet are so soft. Wear these shoes, otherwise we will be worrying about you and feeling the pain of any possibility of your foot being hurt. And Krishna said, but I'm the servant of my cows and my friends. If you make shoes just like this for every cow, that means every hoof of every cow. So in his herd, there's 900,000 cows. That means multiplied by four. You may need one of your little smartphone computers to calculate. They couldn't make that many shoes. So Krishna went barefoot. But shoes, there's so many beautiful prayers about the softness of Krishna's lotus feet. Yayatamam prapatyante tams tathaiva pachamyam. Krishna reciprocates according to our consciousness, according to how we surrender. So to Yashodamai, Krishna's feet are softer than freshly churned butter. And to the gopis, they're even softer than that. But to Kaliya, they were harder than the hardest. Every little tiny step of his dance upon Kaliya's gigantic, all-powerful hoods was like a thunderbolt crashing against him. So painful, unbearable. And yet Krishna's smiling. And the drums are playing, and the flowers are falling. Kali is suffering miserably. Until the hood began to vomit poison. As Krishna was dancing, Kali was so exhausted, he was so beaten down, but from that hood, poison was gushing out, and he had almost a limitless quantity of poison in him. And after all the poison was out, it was all falling in the lake, then blood began to pour out of his mouth. Then that hood would just collapse, but all the other hoods were perfectly fit. So Krishna would jump on another hood and dance. Dance so sweetly. The Brijavasis were watching. The cows were watching. Everyone came back to life to see this dance. It was simultaneously very fearful because they're thinking Krishna is their little friend, helpless. And yet they're seeing these massive mouths and fangs of Kaliya constantly attacking Krishna, but Krishna's dancing and he's smiling and he's having so much fun. It's a very mixed emotion among the Brijavasis. But they're enjoying like anything. Why? Because Krishna's enjoying. And he danced until that mouth of Kaliya, volumes and volumes of deadly, terrible poison gushed outside, then blood, more blood, and more blood, and that hood collapsed. And in this way, Krishna danced on all the hoods of Kali. And when Kali was literally on the verge of death, and Krishna was just blissfully dancing, Kali could understand. He's the Supreme Lord. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How did he come to that realization? Because Kaliya's wives, the Nagapatnis, they were great devotees of Krishna. And whenever they had the opportunity, they would preach to Kaliya. But he completely rejected them. You know, you just do what you're supposed to. Don't talk to me about these things. So many husbands are like that. Really, I've seen. Most of us have seen. Because he was arrogant. Because of his power. Because of his wealth. Because of his influence. Because of his physical strength. He was arrogant. Couldn't hear his wives when they would tell him. And he would see them do puja to Krishna and like, he's useless. Sentimental. But now that his ego was crushed, it was ground into the finest powder and then cast away. Kaliya, by vomiting all the poison of his arrogance, his lust, his anger, his greed, his envy, all that in the form of poison came out of him. And the blood represents, you know, his very misconception of life. At that point, he remembered the words and the example and even the prayers of his wives. And by their association in the past, somehow or other, it made and influenced him. And sometimes the association of devotees, we try to influence somebody and it doesn't appear that anything's happening. But that seed is there in the heart. At the time of the greatest need, that seed can blossom. And sprout and grow and blossom into the flower of devotion. And that's what happened to Kaliya. He understood, this is the mercy of Krishna, what's just happened to me. I'm totally humbled. The mirror of my mind, which was filled with the poison of so much dirt, has been cleansed by this situation. And Kaliya in his heart surrendered. The Nagapatnis, his wives, they saw this. Previously, when Krishna was dancing on Kaliya's hoods, they were thinking that this Kaliya, he's so hateful, so deceitful, so cruel. How many people died because of the poison that he has infected this place with? He's trying with all of his might to kill the beloved Lord of our life, Krishna. He's caused so much pain to the hearts of all the Brijbasis. The best thing for him is let him die. We'll be widows and we'll worship Krishna for the rest of our lives openly. That's what they were thinking. But when they saw that Kaliya was in a humble state, first time in history, and they saw in his eyes the mood of surrender to Krishna, they, as his wives, they had such intuition of his mentality. I think many husbands here know that you can fool brahmacharis, you can fool other people at the office, but you probably can't fool your wife. I don't know. I never had that. But that's an observation. So the Nagapatnis, they know what's in their husband's mind. so they could understand just by his eyes. He's actually humble and he's actually surrendering. So then the Nagapatnis came forward and they put their little children in front of them and they offered beautiful prayers to Krishna. They were praying for mercy to be upon Kaliya. After all, you know, somehow by so many sins of past lives and so much cruelty and so much hatred in his karma, he's gotten this body of this enormous poisonous snake. So somehow it's his karma that he has this body. So how could we blame him for being the way he is? That's just his nature. But now, by your mercy, he's humble. All his arrogance, all his cruelty, all his hatred is gone. And he's surrendering to you. So please bestow your mercy upon him if it is your desire. Otherwise, we will be widows. And then the Nagapatnis themselves surrender to Krishna with the last words, please tell us what is the best thing for us to do. When the Nagapatnis spoke, Kaliya could hear everything they were saying. Even though he was such a belligerent, horrible person, they were lovingly praying. They were intervening with all of his karma and praying for mercy. And he became like their student. He offered prayers to Krishna. And he more or less, according to Sanatan Goswami, he paraphrased what the Nagapatni said. Because we learn how to pray from great personalities. Kaliya, from his heart of hearts, was grateful to Krishna for doing this. By all, I needed this much pain. I needed to be completely vanquished and defeated in front of my wives, in front of my children, in front of all my subjects, in front of everybody. That's what I required to sober up from the intoxication of my arrogant state. And you're so kind to fulfill the prayers of my good wives. You have shown such mercy to me. Now I surrender my heart, I surrender my life, I am forever your servant. Please do whatever you think is best for me. He didn't even ask to be spared. He just gave his life to Krishna. Krishna was very happy. Krishna told Kaliya that I accept you as my devotee, but you don't belong here in Vrindavan. It's a different rasa than people like you. You should go back to your previous home in the Ramanaka Island in the ocean and take your family with you. And have no fear of Garuda, because he will see my footprints on your head. So Kaliya and the Nagapatnis, they brought the best of everything they had to offer Krishna, his gifts. Kali had incredible treasures. They brought Krishna jewels and gold and silver and beautiful lotus-like garlands, malas, and just offering to little Krishna. And Krishna's just like a little cowherd boy, happily accepting it, really couldn't care less. But he's accepting their devotion. And to show his love for the Nagapatnis, Krishna secretly put his own Kaustubha Mani in the lake. And the Nagapatnis found that Kaustubha Mani in Kaliya's, in their treasure chest. They offer that to Krishna, and Krishna wore it. Kaustubha Mani is eternal jewel, but he wanted forever the world to see that it was the gift of the Nagapatnis. Krishna is not different than his name. Nam Nam Akariva Nita Sarva Shaktis. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu prays that Krishna, you are not different than your names. You have invested all your power in your name. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he taught, according to the acharyas and the Vedic scriptures, the shastras, that Krishna's beauty, Krishna's sweetness, Krishna's supreme power, Krishna's abode, Krishna's leelas, Krishna's eternal associates, they're all within the name of Krishna. And when we learn to chant Krishna's name sincerely, without offense and purely, the holy name alone can reveal the highest, most intimate truths of our true identity and the spiritual world. Cheto darapana marjana. When we chant the holy names of the Lord, it cleans the mirror of the mind and all the poisons come out. And some of us have experienced that it's not such a pleasant thing when poison starts coming out. Sometimes as we're chanting over some time, sometimes our ego seems more than it ever did. Sometimes lust and greed and envy and anger, these things, it's not that they're growing. It's just that we're seeing it because it's coming out. It's not that Kaliya became more poisonous when Krishna was dancing on him. The poison was there, but it was coming out. When it's not coming out, it's not visible. But when our anartas start coming out through the chanting of the holy name, sometimes it becomes very difficult to bear. That's why association of devotees, satsang, is so important to keep us understanding. Just carry on. Just keep chanting. Sometimes devotees would come to Srila Prabhupada and say, this is what's happening when I'm chanting. What should I do? And Prabhupada said, keep chanting. But we must trinarapi sunichena tarori vasi hishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadhani. For our chanting to really have the effect, Krishna must be pleased with our life, with our state of consciousness, to have an attitude of seva, of service, of respect for others, not demanding respect for myself. Learning to be humble and tolerant, forgiving. Sri Rupa Goswami says, when we chant the holy names, Krishna is literally, personally, because he's not different than his name, Krishna is dancing on our tongue. Just like he danced on Kaliya's heads. In fact, the tongue kind of looks like that. When Krishna dances on our tongue, he purifies us of all the poisons of the anartas of our illusions and ego. And when the devotees, when great devotees pray for us, Krishna always hears the prayers of his devotees. In Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, Amogha, he was a son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He was so envious. He was blaspheming Lord Chaitanya and the devotees. And like Kaliya, he went through his test. He got cholera. He was on the verge of death. And Lord Chaitanya came and placed his hand on his heart and said, "You're a Brahmin. Envy should not have any place in the heart of a Brahmin. Rise and chant the holy names." And Omega became a Paramhamsa, a great saint. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said, "Why did you do that?" He said, "Because he's your brother-in-law. Because of your devotion, I did that to him." And then there's the story of Jagai and Madhai. They were like Kaliya too, very arrogant, very cruel, very greedy, very angry. Mistreated so many people. But when they came face to face with Mahaprabhu holding the Sudarshan Chakra, it was like Kaliya. They had to surrender. But that wasn't enough. Nityananda Prabhu prayed, begged, "Please be merciful to them." And Lord Chaitanya forgave them and gave them pure bhakti, prema, because they gave up their bad habits. They accepted the chanting of God's names. And because Nityananda Prabhu prayed for them. When Srila Prabhupada came to the Western world, and also when he came back to India, we shouldn't be so proud. So much materialism, so much arrogance, so much greed. But because Srila Prabhupada was praying to Krishna, "Please help these people." By those prayers, we had the opportunity to accept this great mercy. So this chanting of the holy names of the Lord, personally, Krishna's dancing upon us. And for Kaliya, the dancing was painful. But for the Prajavasis, it was very sweet. And similarly, at the beginning, Srila Prabhupada gives analogy of when you have jaundice and you take sugar water. It tastes bitter. But if you just keep tasting it, our disease is removed and it becomes sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. And similarly, sometimes the path of bhakti is a little bitter because we have so many habits. But if we just keep doing with sincerity, then we realize the sweetest of the sweet, Madhuram, Madhuram, Krishna's dancing upon us. Today's verse.
Namastubhyam Bhagavate Purushaya Mahatmane Bhutavashaya Bhutaya Paraya Paramatmane.
We offer our obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although present in the hearts of all living beings as the Supersoul. You are all pervasive. Although the original shelter of all created material elements, you exist prior to their creation. And although the cause of everything, you are transcendental to the material cause and effect, being the Supreme Soul. Beautiful prayer of Nagapatnis. So Kaliya left with his family to Ramanaka Island. And immediately, by Krishna's grace, the lake became crystal clear with lotus flowers blooming. It was fragrant. It was sweet to drink the water, to bathe in the water. It was one of the nicest spots of Vrindavan. And by this time, after the whole day of Krishna and the coils of Kali, and then Krishna dancing and Kali, and the Vrijavasis were going through so many different moods of ecstasy throughout the day, it became evening, and they requested Krishna, "We don't want to leave you. We all want to be with you. And also, we're really tired, so let us rest all together, the whole Vrijavasi community, on the banks of the Yamuna." So they all went to sleep. It was such a beautiful night in the forest of Vrindavan, with the fragrances of kadamba flowers, jasmine flowers, malika flowers, malati flowers, the singing of the kokila, cawing of the peacocks, beautiful cloudless night, fresh breeze from the Yamuna. They lay down, thinking about Krishna's beautiful smile and Krishna's beautiful glances and Krishna's beautiful dances. What a wonderful mood to end the day. Suddenly, in the middle of the night, a massive fire enveloped on all sides around them. The fire was like a wall so thick that it could not be penetrated, and it seemed to be reaching the sky all around them. It was scorching hot. The Vrijavasis woke up. They were in a helpless state. Krishna keeps life so exciting for his devotees. What could they do? The cows were in a pathetic situation. It's really so interesting, because exactly as they were, when Krishna was in the coil of Kaliya, they were all gazing upon Krishna with so much compassion. And now they're all approaching Krishna in a helpless state, and he's looking upon them with such compassion. It's very reciprocal, Braj Bhakti. So they approach Krishna, and they all spoke that we're in a helpless state, we're about to be burned to death, we're devotees, we only want to live to serve you, to give you happiness. Please save us so we can make you happy. That was truly their motive. They were in such a helpless, such a desperate state, with complete faith, looking upon their little Gopal. Just a few hours before, they thought Krishna was hopeless. And now they're looking at Krishna as their only shelter. Krishna smiled. Within a moment, he swallowed the entire fire. And it became a very peaceful, beautiful, romantic evening. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they explain that Kaliya represents an anarta within all of our hearts. Cunningness, deceit, hatred, cruelty. Like Kaliya, it's impossible for any of us to overcome. But if we take shelter of Krishna's names, we take shelter of Krishna through our prayer, through our service, Krishna will deliver us from that anarta. And the forest fire represents disharmony within the community of Vaishnavas. There are so many reasons to disagree. There are so many reasons to fight. There are so many excuses that I'm better than you, and my way is better than yours. And it may be true and it may not be true. But if it creates disharmony, if it creates animosity, disunity, then we should know that we're simply victims of this fire, this demoniac fire. We must learn to resolve our inevitable conflicts within community and within all communities, because ultimately all religion is one. Dharma means Sanatana Dharma, to surrender to the Lord and live in harmony with the Lord. But we break up into so many sects and so many conceptions because Saragrahi, we have missed the essence. We're not seeking the true essence. And it happens within our own little communities too. When Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada was with our Guru Maharaj, his Guru and our Guru were at Radhakund, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said to our Prabhupada, there's fire in the mat. There's so much disagreement and so much competition over who gets what facilities. Better we sell the marbles and the temples and distribute books. Disharmony among devotees, he considered fire. And we all know the destructive power of fire. And throughout the world, it's very important. Sprinkler systems, fire extinguishers, different stairs to get down, because fire can happen anywhere. So there needs to be protection from fire. And similarly, the worst fire is that fire in human hearts that causes conflict. So it's important that we understand the higher principle. The higher principle of what pleases Krishna, what pleases our gurus. If there's difficulties, we have to learn to work them out with respect, with integrity, with honor. We have to uplift each other and not push each other down. And in this spirit, we chant Krishna's holy name. Announcement. There is a wonderful effort throughout the world in ISKCON to distribute entire sets of Srimad Bhagavatam, because on the day of Bhadra Purnima, we'll hear about this some other time, presentations, but Bhadra Purnima, it is said in our shastras that anyone who gives a gift to someone of the Srimad Bhagavatam on Bhadra Purnima, there is showers of flowers of blessings that come upon that person. It's considered very, very auspicious. So throughout ISKCON is a wonderful project. Please let us participate in getting a sect of Srimad Bhagavatam and then giving it as a gift on Bhadra Purnima. Very great tradition. And please do take seriously the cows of Kovardhanika village. And there's another presentation, I believe, that's about to happen now. Gauranga Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.